And we're at a quorum.
Super.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Capital Region Council of Governments Policy Board. Today is Wednesday, October 23rd. It is 12:02, and I'd like to call this meeting to order. We have a quorum, according to Laura. I would like to open up the meeting today and just have you share in with us a brief moment of silence for Weathersfield firefighter Robert Sharkovich Sr., who unfortunately passed away yesterday while he was battling the Lamentation Mountain fire in Berlin. So please join us for a moment of silence. Thank you. And at this time, I think it's probably appropriate for me to turn the microphone over to Weathersfield Mayor Ken Lesser, if he'd like to say a few things about it. Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor Stewart, and I appreciate the opportunity. So we suffered a devastating loss of a beloved member of our community yesterday, doing what he loved to do, which was fighting fires. And he's been a longtime Weathersfield firefighter and was Hartford firefighter. And it is truly tragic. I do want to say thank you. So many of you and so many of your communities have reached out to us with offers of support and kind words and condolences. And I can't tell all of you how much I appreciate that, how much the town of Weathersfield appreciate that. It's going to be a very difficult week or two for us. And certainly this will be forever difficult for us, but we thank Robert Sharkovich for his bravery and dedication, and thank you all again for your support. Thank you, Mayor. Back to you.
Thanks, Mayor. Again, all of our deepest condolences to you and your community and the family of firefighter Sharkovich. Just truly a devastating loss. At this time, I would like to open it up for public comment. Going once, anyone here for the public comment portion of the meeting? Going twice, I'll ask three times. With that being said, I will close the public comment portion of our meeting and move on to approval of the minutes from the September 18th, 2024 meeting. Do I have a motion?
So moved, Madam Mayor. John Coleman.
Thanks.
Second, Lori Spielman.
Thank you, Lori. Any questions or comments on the approval of those minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. We're going to move right along into our presentations and push that up today. And Matt, I will turn it over to you, I believe, to introduce Joe DeLong, CCM's executive director, who's going to talk about the 119K Commission.
Yes, thank you so much, Mayor. And I wanted to thank you and Mayor Lesser for the moment of silence. So very pleased to welcome our good colleague, Joe DeLong from CCM here today. Joe, as you know, is CCM's executive director and chief executive officer. And he and his team, with the good support of the Dalio Foundation, have been working over the last several months on this 119K Commission project. And I know several of you have been involved as well and want to thank you for your work. So thought it would be appropriate to invite Joe today to talk about the key recommendations outlined in the report. And really, Joe, if you could pay a little special attention to those recommendations that relate to the work of CROG and the other COGs around the state. Great to have you, Joe. And then after Joe, we're going to hear briefly from Brenda Bergeron, Deputy Commissioner at DEMAS. Welcome, Joe.
After I shared screen, I had to find the unmute button, Matt. So
very good.
So Matt, thank you. It's good to be on here, you know, amongst friends and colleagues. And many of you have seen this before, as Matt said. And by the way, Matt had mentioned that Dalio and other partners, CROG and certainly some of the other COGs were also a very important partner and an advocate and provider of information to us as we did this work. And so I know that our members, the members of the commission, greatly appreciate and value their inputs as well. So I have here a slide deck that I'm going to go through. It's really the same slide deck that we used when we released the report to the public. It's about a two-hour slide deck. Matt told me I needed to knock it down about 10 minutes, so we'll do that. But I think it begins very simply with the first slide, which of course is the cover slide. But you know, it says on it, as you can see in the blue writing, kind of a little bit below the middle, of addressing Connecticut's statewide crisis. And I think it's very important that we always begin there, of recognizing that this is a plan that was developed to address a crisis. And this is truly a crisis. When you have 119,000 young people, young residents of this state, who are disconnected from being engaged in our economy in a productive and positive way, that is a crisis by any measure. And so Dalio did, I think, outstanding job in doing the study and pointing that out. I think, you know, for the most part, the Boston Consulting Group working with CCM and of course, many of you, the mayors and first selectmen across the state, did a really outstanding job in developing this plan and how we can, in a reasonable way and in a reasonable time frame, really address this crisis in a way that not only socially impacts people's lives, but economically has positive impacts on the state as well. So next slide, what it simply shows is how the commission got at it. And the plan that's put together really falls in these three areas: the preventative actions, which are, some are very well-defined and encompassed in the plan, but some of them also speak to things that the plan doesn't speak to directly, but we know are very important. And that's, you know, the early intervention that even comes into play before this age group, before high school and middle school. It's, you know, there's things that have to be done in terms of early childhood and things of that nature. But the idea of preventing people from getting off track in the first place. And then the recuperative actions, which is making sure that we really identify quickly. And the last one there, again, the early intervention, which is identifying very, very quickly young people who are getting off track, who are at risk, who are becoming disconnected, and not, you know, discovering their challenges 4 or 5 or 6 years down the road, but recognizing it right away and having a plan in place that can address those things. So I won't go through this whole slide other than to point out that this is really reflective of the process of the various stakeholders from all over the state that were engaged in this. Probably the most important stakeholder of all. I may upset other stakeholders by saying it, but I think the commission members will agree, were the around 280 at-risk or disconnected young people that we engaged with through this process directly in one-on-one conversations. Really hearing directly from them of what their day-to-day challenges were, and understanding for those who had been in the system and found their way to success what worked, and for those who did not find their way to success or simply fell through the cracks where the systems failed them. And that gets us to this, you know, kind of a busy slide that really represents what the report speaks to, which are 22 aligned actions to meet the goal of reducing this population by half over the next decade. Matt had mentioned spending a little time on what really involved the COGS, really involved the regional entities. And I think most of that can be found under this first strategic pillar, the strategic pillar number one of coordination. And you see three aligned actions in there, but if you read the report, what they really build to is they build to closing the gaps, the significant gaps that exist across our systems in Connecticut, where if a young person moves from town to town, they're often lost. Or if they age out of high school and the services are only provided to high school students, they're often lost. They're just in through our education system. Many times if they go from one school system to the next, we heard from educators consistently that said, we get new students, sometimes even from a neighboring town, and we have no idea what their needs are, no idea what their history was or what their background is. And so this whole first set of recommendations is built around building out a network that closes those gaps. And so how do you do that? Well, the first thing, it's very much built upon a system that relies on the COGS. The report calls for creating these youth success oversight boards that would be housed under the COGS. They would be funded, of course, through the state or to serve a variety of purposes, but they would be housed under the COGS that then would go out and would identify local hubs in each city or town that would be very much responsible for building out this network. And those local hubs would kind of create a hub and spoke model for every individual student to figure every individual young person to identify their needs. So it's student-centered, figuring out what the different spokes are, being their different needs, and building out their needs all the way around in all of those hubs and spokes and pulling them up into this regional network to make sure that if that young person moves throughout the network, that they're not lost, that they continue to be tracked, that they don't fall through cracks, and that we can eliminate and identify those gaps. And then from there, where the majority of the work is done at the, you know, through the COGS in this new regional funded structure, from there, that would flow up to a statewide structure that would then allow the opportunity to not only track these young people if they moved across the regions, but it would also allow for the data tracking to see what's really working, who's doing it well, who's seeing the most success, and then the areas where we need to make adjustments in other parts of the state. The final piece of that, not really a final piece of the whole thing in that area, but one of the final components of that that's really important is the funding of these nonprofits and these social services. Right now, they spend an exorbitant amount of time fighting for funding amongst themselves, really using their own resources to advocate, to go to the state house, to write grants, to do all these different things, and to try to take a pie, a very limited pie, and fight for their own piece of it. And in many cases, even if they get that piece of the pie and they're providing a very good service, that service is not meeting the needs of the young person because of the other gaps that we've talked about. By building this network, we can actually flow the funding through these offices of these youth services oversight commissions, through the COGS. We can flow that funding through the state, down through those offices that are done through the COGS, and into these service providers within the network. So they're no longer fighting over funding, and they're also, in order to get funding, they're no longer going it alone. We're no longer funding things at the state level that are giving very, very limited return, even if they are a positive program. So a whole lot of that first pillar of coordination is really built around that. It's built around leveraging what we can do well regionally and pulling the needs of these kids up into a well-organized, well-coordinated regional system. From there, you know, we get a whole lot into the education funding and the education policy things. We have, I think all of you have, you know, seen some of the recent stories, one school system where 70% of the kids are not testing at grade level. You know, we've all seen the horrible story about a young lady who made it all the way through the public education system and graduated without being able to read or write. A whole lot of recommendations in here that redefine that accountability structure, that early warning system structure, and how schools are measured on their success. Right now, in many ways, they're measured as a race to graduation. These new standards would measure making sure that there is a post K-12 plan for young people. So we're not just getting them to graduation, but we understand whether they're prepared to enter the workforce, whether it's a trade, whether they're going on to a community college, whether they're going on to a four-year college, but understanding that each young person that goes up through our school system, there needs to be a plan in place for that young person's continued success upon completion of the school system. So there's a lot of those areas. And then there's a lot of areas in education funding, a lot of areas of workforce development. One of the things that we learned from young people who were incarcerated, almost to a T, every one of those young people who ended up on the streets, whether it was selling drugs, breaking into vehicles, doing other things, almost every one of them told us at some point in their story where they reached out for help and they reached out for support and they tried to get a job through a workforce program or something of that nature, and they were turned away. And so when they were turned away, they went to the streets as the place, the kind of the last place they knew is an easy place to get the resources that they needed. And then they found that there was no way out. So I want to jump. There's two illustrative examples in here. I'm not going to read them, but these are just to point out that we've taken two very unique stories and the CROG was sent these slides so they can all be shared with you and you can read these two illustrative examples. But what they show and how these 22 aligned actions would actually kick into play for a young person's individual circumstances to take them from being either at risk or if they were completely disconnected, and these things would get them back on track to being productive parts of society. The great thing about this is you can create any story that you want that we've heard from any young person. You can plug it in at the top and you can show where these aligned actions take that young person straight to a path of success. So let's get into some money things real quick. As you see here, all of the slides in blue, those basically represent 21 of the 22 aligned actions, what the actual full investment would be to implement 21 of these 22 strategies. And then the block that you see in green, that is one of the aligned actions. That's aligned action number 7 that has to do with ECS and education funding. And you can see it's a bigger number than the other 21 combined, but I want to spend just a minute to explain why. I think it's very important with this narrative that people understand why this aligned action is included in this way. What you see here is a great slide done by the Boston Consulting Group that is so important, I think, for the people in this room on this call, and so important for the residents of Connecticut to understand. There has been a tremendous narrative at the state level that since 2017, that we have not had any tax increases, that state policy has not been to enact any tax increases. What this slide shows you in a very limited capacity is how inaccurate that statement or that narrative is. What it shows is that in real dollars against inflation, in real dollars, the state has reduced its commitment to public education since 2017 by $407 million a year. When you break it down per student with declining enrollments and all those factors, in real dollars, the state has reduced its commitment to its proportion of public education by about $400 per student since 2017. That is $407 million proportionally that came out of the state budget and got shifted into local property taxes. That is a $407 million property tax increase done through the property tax any way you look at it. And so I think it was very important for the commission to be able to lay that out, that without doing anything, without making any further investments, if the state had only held to its proportional commitments since 2017, it would already be paying $407 million more annually than what it is. This breaks down how the new funding formula in the report, how the commission members came to it. If you look at the top and you see the light blue, that's the current ECS formula. That's where we are today with absolutely no changes. If you go all the way to the bottom and you look at scenario number 8, that's when the foundation for the ECS formula was put in, was in 2013. If all the state of Connecticut did was just adjust the foundation for the formula to inflation since 2013, no weight changes, nothing else, the exact same formula today as it was in 2013, just adjusting it for inflation to keep up, the state would be paying $818 million more a year in public education costs. Of course, we just talked about 2017 and the reduction in real dollars there. If the state had just adjusted for inflation since 2017, they'd be paying $654 million a year. So the scenario that's basically being promoted by the commission, which does a slight foundational adjustment and then adjusts the weights to make sure that we are getting more to the students of need, creates a $545 million investment, still significantly less than what the investment would be if the state had just kept up with inflation. So I think it was important, you know, for that narrative for people to understand that. And then the last slide, Matt, I tried to keep it as short as I could for a long-winded guy. The last slide is, how do you pay for it? Because a lot of people will look at this and say, well, you've got this plan. We saw the slide earlier with the waterfall in the blue and then the green, but that seems like a whole lot of taxation. I think it was really important for the commission when they put this out that they actually showed how to pay for it without new taxes. And I would argue, as crazy as this sounds, that if it were paid for and done the right way, it would actually come at tax reductions, not new taxes. Because if you look all the way to the right, where you have the caution sign with the exclamation point, that's the do nothing. That's the stay the course. That is the state has done everything great. We've handled this the right way. We don't need any changes. And that shows you what the cost of that inaction is. You're talking about $700 million annually between lost tax revenue and additional financial burdens to the state. I mean, that's a significant amount of money, $750 million annually that the state is losing by not addressing this population. You're talking about foregone GDP growth of about $5.5 billion a year. And by not addressing the ECS formula, you are talking about continued ongoing significant property tax increases, which not only create greater education inequities, but create a greater burden on our business community, create a greater burden on our residents, on all of our local budgets. So I think that was the first thing where we really needed to level set the discussion was there is the highest cost, the most significant cost, not socially, but economically, is the cost of staying the course. And then the commission laid out, with the help of the Boston Consulting Group, the other ways to pay for this strategy in terms of social impact bonding, on the workforce side, things that look a lot like TIF financing, basically recapturing the economic activity and the growth that you receive by properly investing in these young people and using that growth, using those revenues, those new tax revenues that are coming in, and that lessening of spending where it costs a whole lot more to incarcerate somebody than it does to prepare them for the workforce, reinvesting that into paying for the plan. So those are, you know, sort of the high level. You know, we only have a few minutes here to go through this. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I think the important thing from this slide is for people to realize that the most costly thing to Connecticut's taxpayers and the only option that guarantees tax increases is the option of staying the course. That's the only one that guarantees it, where the option of investing in the right way, using the growth to pay for the investment and putting these young people back on track is actually the one that has the greatest return for Connecticut's taxpayers. So Matt, I will stop there and I will get out of the share screen mode here if I can figure it out.
Thank you very much, Joe, for that concise but comprehensive overview of the report. And I want to thank you for your personal leadership and advocacy on this issue. I know it's been important to you for a good long time. Mayor, I think we have time for one or two questions for Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. Do I see any hands? Do I have anybody? I've got Mr. Nelson from Simsbury. Oh, you're on mute, Mark. Nope, still can't hear you. Do I have anyone else? Doing a quick search, don't see anybody. All right. Thank you, Joe, very much for that.
Thank you, Mayor. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, I know Mark couldn't get his question, and if they want to email me, jdelong@ccm-ct.org, I would be happy to engage and answer any questions that you have.
Very good. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
So now, Mayor, I'm going to move on to our next presentation, and very pleased to welcome a longtime friend of CROG, Brenda Bergeron, Deputy Commissioner at DESP and DEMIS. And Brenda's going to talk briefly about a very important topic and our state's efforts to ensure election security, because we've got just a little election right around the corner, as we all know. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you so much, Matt. And thank you to everyone for having me on today. I see a lot of familiar faces. Before I start on the election security, I just want to briefly talk about two events that happened yesterday. The first is the 911 outage. that was an issue apparently with Frontier. There were two pieces of equipment that failed. We're finding out more through the DES Division of Statewide Emergency Telecommunications. But I really want to thank the towns for the efforts they made to make sure that their citizens got the right information on how to reach out to 911 in the absence of the ability to call. I will say that we have an eager population because lots and lots of people tried to see if the text to 911 worked, which caused some issues with the dispatch centers, but everybody handled it in a very flexible way. So I just wanted to thank everyone for that. The second thing I wanted to mention is the ongoing Berlin fire. Of course, the tragedy that we suffered yesterday was, there's a lot of heartbroken people in Wethersfield and elsewhere. I did want to mention, since this is the CROG group, that Region 3 has been very, very collaborative on this. The Region 3 Emergency Management Team has gone out and is helping. So emergency management teams, IMTs, don't run the disaster for you or the emergency, but they support you. And so planning and logistics and all the things that emergency management does, these IMT teams do. On a similar note, and I want to thank Cheryl for her work working closely with the on-scene folks at in Berlin. I'm going to talk in a little while about some of the election security things we're doing. And in particular, Cheryl has been working with us on the Homeland Security side on some of the election security issues. So a little shout out to Cheryl for all of that. Our regional coordinators have been taking shifts at the site. Our public information officer is helping Berlin on some of that. So it's really been a team effort of municipal, state, and potentially federal partners. So I just want to thank everyone. So I know your time is short and you have a lot of things to talk about, so I'll move right into election security. Starting in January, DEMIS, which is the Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security, started an election security working group that was made up of federal partners like the FBI, the U.S. Postal Service, U.S. Attorney, state partners like the Chief State's Attorney, the State Elections Enforcement Commission, and obviously as the lead, the Secretary of the State's Office and our agency. And municipal partners like the head of the Connecticut Police Chiefs Association and also the Connecticut Career Fire Chiefs, Chief Januszewski, and others have all been meeting to talk on a regular basis about the things that are needed to maintain election security during a very hotly contested election cycle. Kudos again to the registrars and the moderators who are the frontline folks doing this work. And our goal is to minimize the number of interruptions to what they're doing and to give them all of the maximum protections that they can have. So I just wanted to share a couple of the things we've done and are doing as we move forward. First of all, we created a series of handouts that are really just to be put up. It's a document to be put up in grocery stores and laundromats and libraries for those people that may not have internet access or may have questions about elections. Those were handed out by town at the registrar's meetings. We still have some left. So our regional coordinators are reaching out to each of the towns individually and getting those packets, probably to their emergency management directors who could use their CERT teams or others to make sure that information is passed out. So that's one of our public information campaigns. We also have used some Homeland Security grant money to do public messaging, social media, and elsewhere to just give people confidence in the elections system process this year. We held a call on October 9th for municipalities to give some more information similar to what I'm giving you today. We also have a law enforcement roll call PowerPoint that has been sent to all communities through the Police Chiefs Association, but we're also getting it out to CEOs, to other public safety groups to know what the rules are for elections, because there are, you know, we're already seeing some questions that come up, and the State Elections Enforcement Commission, the Chief State's Attorney's Office, and the Secretary of the State's Office really were instrumental in putting this document together. There's a version with a voiceover for roll call, and there's also, today we released a version that is just narrative, because some people have had trouble passing this on because for their computers can't necessarily accept it. So that's really been a key piece so that everybody is on the same page, understanding that no matter what your normal circumstances are in an elections situation, the moderator is in charge of that facility, helping to give them the comfort. As you know, our statewide exercise this year was getting together the local public safety officials with the local elections officials and making sure that the local emergency operations plan and the elections continuity plan, that everybody understood their roles and saw that any gaps could be filled. The other thing we've been doing is since early voting started, we're holding a quick phone call with the group on a daily basis about 3 o'clock, just to check in and see if there's any issues that we can, if necessary, share with others. So far, it's been good. As you know, the voting has been very successful, early voting. I think last night it was at 56,000 and lots of participation. The two other things I wanted to mention is that on the day of the election itself, November 5th, we will be running a virtual emergency operations center for the state emergency operations piece. Each of the normal groups that have organization cells during an election will be running theirs. So Secretary of the State's office will have theirs, state elections will have theirs, FBI has theirs, our Connecticut Intelligence Center has theirs, all of these will be running, but they will be able to talk to each other if necessary through this virtual EOC. Also at the regional level, each of our DEMIS regional coordinators will be opening a virtual EOC for the towns. So, you know, we're not interfering with the normal process. If, registrars and moderators call the Secretary of the State's office, that's great. But if something happens that someone else that's not in that normal loop sees, whether it's emergency management or public works or somebody else, they can contact their regional coordinator and we will work that through the larger group. The other thing I wanted to mention is this year, in order to make sure that we can keep polling stations open as much as possible and recognizing the push of swatting that's taken place in school systems and also in businesses and other places, we've set up what are called JHATs, which are Joint Hazard Assessment Teams. So those teams will be set up across the state. They're not going to be doing what the FBI or law enforcement would do, but they will be, if there's a swatting call that goes out to numerous places, instead of sending the whole team to one place, they'll be able to have smaller teams that will go out and check and make sure that the credibility of a threat is not there and the facility can stay open. So that's really my very quick summary of everything. But the bottom line from your perspective is that we are there for you. And it's everybody's there. It's really been a phenomenal team effort of local, state, and federal partners. And so if you have any questions, feel free to email me at brenda.bergeron@ct.gov. But otherwise, your teams at the local level are doing a fantastic job working with the Secretary of the State's office and others. The last thing I want to say is we recognize that November 5th is the beginning of a process as well as the end of a process. So we are also, particularly the Connecticut Intelligence Center, is keyed in on other key dates in the state, including December 11th, which I think is the deadline for ascertainment. And then December 17th is the day that all of the electoral college members in Connecticut will meet to cast their votes. And we recognize basically we will be operating this group from January of this year to January of next year as we just continue to make sure that we're all communicating and coordinating during this time period. That's it. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you so much, Brenda. I want to thank you and Cheryl Assis from our team for your leadership. I'm really impressed with some of the innovative ideas you have, such as the JHAS teams. Mayor Stewart, we have time for maybe one or two questions for Brenda.
Trying to get back here. Okay. Any questions for Brenda? I'm looking through, and I don't see any hands. Brenda, looks like you're off the hook on a heavy subject.
There you go. But if anybody comes up with something, don't hesitate to communicate because we'll get you to the right person if it's not us. So thank you for the opportunity too, Mayor, and everyone else.
Thank you so much. Yes. Thank you. All right. We are going to move on to our legislative update. Matt.
Yes, I'll be happy to do that, Mayor. And we're going to take care of action items first and save staff reports for the end. So just briefly on the legislative update, you'll note that the first action item is a resolution to enter into contract with Kozak and Salinas for government relations and lobbying services. And that's a different firm from our incumbent. And I'll get into that process when we get to that agenda item, but I did want to take a moment to thank the team at Rome, Smith, and Kowalski, in particular, Chris Smith and John Harkins from that firm, for the great service that they did and have provided to CROG for over five decades now. I mean, they were always accessible and did a very, very nice job for us. So I want to, on the record, thank them for their work and their service to our organization. And then secondly, Mayor, I would note that you and a number of others have once again volunteered to serve as members of CROG's Legislative Committee, and Jason Bauza will serve as our chair. And we're going to hold our first meeting on November 4th from 11 to 1 p.m. I imagine that the committee will meet probably three, maybe four times in an effort to develop a proposed legislative agenda for the full policy board to consider at its December meeting. Recall, I think everyone knows, we're going into the long session with the General Assembly this year, January through June. So just that was just a very quick legislative update today, Mayor. Happy to take any questions people may have on that item. If not, we can go into the business items.
Any questions? Looking through, seeing none. We'll keep it moving. Into the action items we go.
Great. Thank you very much, Mayor. So I'll move on to item number seven, and this is a proposed resolution to enter into contract with Kozak and Salinas. So we were looking as a staff, our contract with the previous firm was coming due, and we noted that we had not gone out to bid for this service in a good long time, if ever. To the best of, in looking at our records, we had not gone out to bid for the service in probably five decades. So it had been a good long time. And we thought certainly to be consistent with best practice, we need to periodically go out to bid for this service. So we did just that. We issued a request for qualifications. I want to thank Pauline Yoder, our chief operating officer, for quarterbacking the team. And we had a small team of policy board members who assisted us. I want to thank Mayor Stewart for helping us out, Jason Bauza, Mayor Lisa Murata from Rocky Hill, Council Chair Lisa Thomas from Coventry, and Steve Stefanu, the town manager in Manchester. So we went out to bid. I think we received six responses, five we thought were qualified, narrowed the list down a little bit, interviewed four, thought all four were solid, but very pleased to recommend Kozak and Salinas to you today. And what I think separated this firm for us were a couple of things. Number one, Donna Hamzy-Kurotia, who all of us know, and Donna has worked for a long time at CCM before joining this firm. Donna brings a wealth of knowledge about municipal government in Connecticut, also has built very, very strong relationships with agency staff at both the commissioner and other levels within the state agencies, knows the members of our delegation very well, and I think has a passion and an understanding for municipal and regional issues. So we were really excited that Donna would serve as the principal for this engagement. And we were also impressed by the other members of the team and the chemistry that they had. So we are proposing and seeking the board's approval to enter into a three-year contract with KNS And that cost would be $26,000 a year. Very, very reasonable fee, very, very competitive fee for the significant service that they would be providing to us. So Mayor, I'd now like to turn to Jason Bauza, if he's in a position to do so, to make a motion. And Jason may have a few comments to add as well. Thank you.
Yep. Jason.
Thank you, Mayor. And Matt, thank you for setting the table for that. First of all, I want to thank you for your stewardship of the processes we've gone through this. I echo your thanks to Rome Smith Kowalski over the last, I didn't realize it was five decades, but their significant service to CROG and the organization. As we move forward, I think that working with the team at COSEC and Selena and Donna in particular is going to bring some new energy towards the legislative work that we're trying to accomplish on behalf of CROG and its member towns. She's already hard at work, and I would like to make a motion to authorize Matt Hart's signature with COSEC and Selena for a contract for government relations and lobbying work.
I'll second it, John Coleman.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, John. Any other questions or comments or discussion on this item? Scroll through, see if I see any hands. I don't see any. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much. The next item is accepting the CROG Vision Zero goal. And I will call on Roger to give us a rundown on this one.
Thank you, Mayor. Our before you is a resolution with a CROG Vision Zero goal. And I'll just read that briefly. So CROG's Vision Zero goal is to reach zero fatal and serious injury roadway and multi-use trail crashes by 2040, with an intermediate target to reduce fatal, serious, and overall crashes by 50% by 2032. So in general, the Vision Zero concept is that while all crashes, while we desire no crashes, the Vision Zero prioritizes the elimination of crashes that result in death and serious injuries, since no one should experience that when using our transportation system. And the USDOT has adopted this Vision Zero approach and a safe system approach in more detail. And part of that is to, we at CROG also obtained a Safe Streets and Roads for All grant, where we will be developing a safety action plan to prioritize projects and strategies and processes to eliminate and reduce fatal and serious injury crashes. The first part of that process is for that the basically is required for a good solid safety action plan is that there's an official public commitment to the eventual goal of zero roadway fatalities and serious injuries. So that's basically what we're asking you to do today is to make that commitment by adopting this resolution. A few comments about the wording of the goal is that the we came up with a 2040 year for the target, feeling like 2050 is a little bit too far out there, but we do have a long way to go. So 2040 seemed reasonable. But along those lines, there was discussion, and this was discussed by our Vision Zero Task Force that's held about four meetings so far, and then it was presented to the Transportation Committee and approved by the Transportation Committee. And then there was some discussion that we should also include some wording about overall crashes. And I remember one discussion saying, well, if you're hit by a bike and end up on the hood of a car, you might not have been seriously injured, but down the road that with increased speed, that could result in a serious injury. So we should target on our 50% reduction by 2032 include overall crashes. So that wording is in that goal. We also included recently that we added the multi-use trail to the roadway system. It's not strictly part of our roadway system, but with increased construction and operation and use of multi-use paths in our region, which is a great thing, and the increased use of electric bikes on facilities at higher speeds, the likelihood of injury is also on our multi-use trails. So that in general is a brief overview of how we got to this goal that's before you today, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Roger. Does anyone have any questions? I don't see any hands up. Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
I'm not sure we move the motion, Madam Chair.
Oh, sorry.
Which I will so do.
Second, Steve Stefano.
Thanks, John. Thank you. Let's try this again. All those in favor, please say
aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. For the next item, let's have a motion first for item number 9, accepting funds for municipal data improvement.
I'll move approval, Madam Chair.
Second.
Thank you, Steve. Now call on Eric to give us a little rundown.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a resolution for us to accept funds to from OPM to improve the quality of the parcel line data and also the CAMA assessment data in our municipalities. It's being distributed all around Connecticut, and it's going to be distributed through the COGS. There is a little bit of detail on this, and I'm more than happy to contact me via email or phone, and I can give you whatever information after we approve the resolution.
Any questions or comments on this item? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you. Item number 10, do I have a motion?
So moved, Madam Chair.
John.
Second, we'll keep it up.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks, Steve. Cheryl, item number 10.
Sure, Mayor. So this resolution authorizes Matt to submit his spending plan and enter into MOAs for the FY24 State Homeland Security Grant. CRAD will receive about $428,000 in funding, which includes set-asides for the Hartford Bomb Squad, the CAP Region Hazmat Team, and the protection of soft targets. And the spending plan approved by CREPC last week includes about $45,000 for training and exercises and $130,000 for sustainment and maintenance of all of the regional equipment that we've purchased over our many years of managing this grant.
Thank you, Cheryl. Are there any further questions? Seeing and hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 11, do I have a motion?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second.
Thank you, Steve. Cheryl, back to you.
Yep. I don't know, Laura, if you want to put 11 up or great. Thank you. So this resolution authorizes us to hire a part-time contractor through the CROG Regional Fund. And if approved, the individual hired would allow us to offer more full week incident command system, which is ICS 300-400 level classes, and also allow us to conduct some customized tabletop exercises at the request of our towns. You could request things like a cybersecurity exercise, active shooter, and whatnot. The individual would also assist us in our yearly review of our various plans, which would include the Regional Emergency Support Plan as well as our Blue Plan.
Thank you, Cheryl. Are there any questions on this item? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. We'll move into our TIP amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are 4 TIP amendments this month. Unless anyone has any questions, I won't go through in detail. I can. They're all pretty straightforward. They have all been unanimously approved by the Transportation Committee and recommend approval by the Policy Board acting as the MPO, and I would so move.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion, questions, comments? They're all up here on the screen for us. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. I believe at this time, we're going to return to our staff reports. And Matt, I'll kick it back to you.
Thank you so much, Mayor, and thank you to all the policy board members for your support of those action items. So I'll try to keep this very concise. First, in the category of meetings and events, I want to thank the town of Ellington and the Ellington Public Schools for hosting a community update on crumbling foundations on September 17th. It was really well attended, and I think we were able to provide really good information to homeowners and others who may not have filed a claim yet. And then on a related point, wanted to congratulate our captive insurance company, CIFSIC, which CROG was instrumental in establishing, on a real milestone. A couple weeks ago, they reached the level of having served 1,000 families in our region. So that's a real tremendous accomplishment. And that's just since 2019. So I think we can all take pride in that accomplishment. Moving on, we held a shared services workshop here in our building on October 8th. That was a big success as well. We had a packed house, and I want to thank our moderator, Peter Souza, town manager in Windsor. And then we had three folks from OPM, Martin Heft, Rebecca Auger, and Christine Goupil. They talked about the regional performance incentive program and the state statutes that promote service sharing. And then we had a very good panel of municipal folks, Maria Capriola from Mansfield, Andy Cerioli from Plainville, Jim Rupert from Bolton, and Pauline Yoder from our team. And they all talked about service sharing between towns and school districts, between towns, and then through the COG itself. So we're looking to replicate that workshop model on other topics. Moving on, I have invited our Attorney General, William Tong, to attend your December meeting to talk about the state efforts to curb illicit cannabis products with a particular focus on youth, you know, real critical public safety and public health issue for our state. And they're doing some good work in that area. I've also invited David Corris, who many of you know. He's the new executive director of the new municipal development agency charged with municipal redevelopment agency, excuse me, that will serve in a similar capacity to CRDA, but representing the larger state. And working with David to bring him in early next year to talk about the work of his new agency and how he can connect with all of you in an effort to serve your communities. I foresee that as a great partnership with CROG. Next slide, please. In terms of funding opportunities, there are just two I wanted to highlight today and would encourage you to continue to keep an eye out for our monthly newsletter. I want to thank Elizabeth Sanderson from our team for her continued work to publish that. Connecticut DEEP has announced applications for their open space and watershed land acquisition grant program. I know many of our communities have successfully used that in the past. And then a relatively new one, an urban green and community garden grant program. Both applications are due December 2nd. If you have any questions, if you're looking for letters of support, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. And then, can you go back, Laura? The DEEP's Bureau of Energy and Technology Policy, this is a new initiative as well. They're seeking input from our distressed municipalities that are home to multi-dwelling units in an effort to promote more equitable broadband infrastructure and service. So if you represent a distressed municipality and you're interested in this issue, would ask you to review the survey, which we will send out to all of you. And this will inform potential applications for improvements to broadband infrastructure in your community. Next slide, please. So a couple project and departmental updates for you. Our Regional Purchasing Coalition, which I think now serves approximately 135 of the state's 169 cities and towns, is presently collecting quantities for our gasoline bid. The bid will be issued on November 14th. You see the letters in bold here. This is a no piggybacking bid, so you must submit quantities to participate. And similarly, our Purchasing Coalition's Electricity Consortium will hold a reverse auction the last week of October, looking for some great prices there. Also wanted to thank Robin Nichols from our team and Pauline Yoder. They've done really good work preparing and submitting a Regional Waste Authority grant to DEEP, and we will be receiving $570,000 to support and promote the work of our Central Connecticut Solid Waste Authority, or CSWA. In addition, I wanted to note that we've executed an agreement with Tool Design for consulting assistance for our regional bike ped priority network plan. You may recall we've talked about this a little bit before in the past. This is an effort to build off of the East Coast Greenway and some of the major trails in our region. How do we establish other connections to places like New Britain and West Hartford and build off of the highway? And if we can categorize the East Coast Greenway as a highway and establish more connections that can serve for commuting purposes, enable folks to take care of things necessary for everyday life, either on a bike or through walking. Next slide, please. A couple more departmental updates, if you will. I want to thank Cheryl Assis and her team for hosting a 5-day course for our Capital Region's dive team. Also, our staff continues to work with you all to coordinate the adoption of the Regional Natural Hazard Mitigation and Climate Action Plan. Approximately 30 of our towns have completed local approvals. Kudos to all of you. We've got a few left, as you can see here. Feel free to reach out to Heidi Samokar from our team if you need any assistance. I want to also thank members of our team, Sonia Karazelis and Pauline Yoder and Caitlin Palmer and Elizabeth Sanderson for their work on a revolving loan fund agreement. It's only the second one, I believe, we've ever executed. And this is for Hartford's Arrowhead Gateway project, really exciting project there. And that team is also working on a new application seeking assessment funds that's due November 14th. And then lastly, on this slide, wanted to highlight a couple projects. We're working through the procurement process for three projects that I think are going to be exciting for us. One is a warehousing land use and transportation impact study, looking at our communities, particularly those that are adjacent to major highways that have received a number of applications for warehousing related projects. Want to be able to provide a set of best practices for you all. We're beginning work on a regional housing strategy. We're going to be looking at things such as the feasibility of a regional land bank and creating model regulations. And then last but not least, our regional stormwater authority feasibility study, where we're going to be looking at creating the potential to create a regional authority or utility related to stormwater here in our region. Laura, I believe, one last slide under staff reports, some committee updates. Our Regional Planning Commission met recently, approved our Regional Plan of Conservation Development. They're going to be submitting that to all of you at your next meeting on November 20th. Transportation Committee met recently, endorsed the TIP amendments that you approved today, also approved an on-call list for traffic and safety engineering. I think that's a good thing. A lots of funding increase for Berlin. Our Capital Region Citizen Corps Council participated in a statewide event. They're going to be meeting again on November 4th. The Vision Zero Task Force that Roger mentioned will be meeting again on November 14th. And we're in the early process of talking about and setting up a Vision Zero workshop and forum for all of our towns for early next year. And then our Municipal Services Committee will hold its next meeting on December 3rd. Just a couple of additional points I would add before I close on staff reports today. I want to thank you, Mayor Stewart, and the City of New Britain, and as well as the City of Hartford, East Hartford, and Windsor Locks on the grant awards you're going to be receiving under the Community Investment Fund. We are very pleased to support those projects, looking forward to seeing them come to fruition. And then this morning, I was able to attend a business showcase in the town of Rocky Hill. And I want to thank Mayor Murata and Town Manager Ray Carpentino for the invite. It was great to spend some time with them as well. That completes my report, Mayor Stewart. Happy to take any quick questions that you or other members may have. And I know we are close to time.
Thanks, Matt. Any questions for Matt?
Just real quick, this is Steve. I just want to commend Krog on the shared services workshop on October 8th. I found it very valuable. And those are the sort of things that I think, just from my perspective on the policy board, that it would encourage Matt and Pauline and the team to continue to push, because I find it valuable to our member municipalities to see best practices in action, and as best we can advocate for changes at the state that allow us to do those things easier. So just wanted to share that and give positive feedback.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, and we're going to look to do more of that for sure.
Thank you. And the last thing we have today is a letter of support.
Yes, Mayor, this was a letter of support we issued on behalf of DOT's project seeking federal funding related to the CityLink project, which is part of the larger Greater Hartford Mobility Study. And this specifically relates to the elements of that project that would cap portions of 84 and enhance connections to the Connecticut River. So we're very pleased to support the DOT's application here. Mayor, I forgot to add under my report, members of the Personnel and Finance Committee will be meeting right after the policy board meeting ends, and they can just stay right on this same Zoom call. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Thank you all for your time today. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
No move, Madam Chair.
Second.
Thank you all. We're adjourned. The time is 1:04 p.m. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you all so much. Thanks, Mayor.
Thanks so much.